Yay, good evening, ladies. Welcome to call number 60. That's so amazing. I get so excited as like the numbers increase and just reflecting on the memories from over the years. And some of you have even been here for like a lot of those, which is really cool too. But thanks for being here tonight, everybody. Really, really, really appreciate you setting aside the time and prioritizing the time to hop on yet another Zoom call. I'm sure that a lot of you are feeling pretty zoomed out. I've been here like chatting with several of my clients who are obviously working from home, and like Zoom fatigue is really starting to set in. So thank you for being here. I acknowledge that it's an effort, and I am really, really intending that tonight's call is super valuable for you, informative, experiential, and also something that you can take with you and really implement from here on out that I think is going to be really hopefully beneficial and helpful with a lot of the things that we talk about in LFP. So happy to have all of you here. I'll do just a quick show of hands right now, and then we're going to do an intro round. Who feels like they have a pretty good like understanding and handle on what the ego is and how it functions and how it operates? I just want to get like a read of the room. Ish. Okay. Cool. Okay. Awesome. That'll help me gauge things here. Beautiful. All right. Oh, no worries, Griffin. Thank you for that. Okay. Cool. So we're going to do mostly experiential activities tonight because this is one of those things that as I have been thinking about how to teach about the ego and how to facilitate understanding and knowledge and awareness around ego, I kept running into this thing where like I get it and I would try to like write it out to explain it or to like create a little one sheet because a couple of my clients had asked me specifically about like what's up with the ego and self-esteem and how does that work. But I kept finding that it's experiential. It's something that, sure, conceptually, we'll talk about that a little bit in terms of like what it is, how it develops, and things like that. But overall, it's something that I really want you ladies to be able to feel around and have a sense of for your own experience so that when you go out into the world, you'll have this as a like kind of like a new vocabulary or like an added vocabulary to your already pre-existing awesome compass, your internal compass. So tonight's exercises are going to be pretty experiential. They might be stretchy. They probably will be stretchy. And as all of you know, this is the safest place in the entire world to stretch and to get vulnerable and to share and to support each other and to say the things that maybe we don't say to our friends or our family or maybe even to our journals. And the point of these calls, especially the point of this call, is to experience those stretch zones, experience some parts and aspects of ourselves that might tend to kind of freak us out, and do it in a safe container and play within the safe container and hopefully alchemize some of the stuff that tends to hold us back, tends to really impact us in a negative way. So I just really want to set the stage. Everything is confidential, as everybody knows. I know a couple of you are kind of new to these calls, so I just want to going to reiterate the safety zone and that we're all here for each other and we're all in this together. And really, we're so much more similar than we are different in our human experience. And that's going to be a through line that we talk about tonight and really tap into tonight is our similarity. And because it can feel really isolating to be a human being, it can really feel isolating, like we're uniquely flawed or we're uniquely, you know, struggling or on this journey or celebrating or what have you. And tonight, I really want to hold the space for the togetherness factor here as we drop in and we share. So, all right, without further ado, let's go ahead and do an intro round, and we'll keep it succinct, but by all means, feel free to like, you know, share to the degree that feels meaningful for you. So we'll do the usual. We'll do name, location. We'll do gratitude. And then I would love for you to share with us somebody or something that you really, really, really love. So it can be a person, past, present. It can be a pet, an animal, something or somebody that you, whenever you're around them, or I'm going to call pets them too, whenever you're around them, you feel immense love or connection or positivity or excitement. So I'll invite each of you to share that component too. All right. So intro round, I'll go ahead and pick on Maura since it was your birthday. Good to see you here.
Okay. I'm Maura. I am, did we say location? I'm in Connecticut. I am grateful for my birthday yesterday. Now, because everybody doesn't get them, because the more that we accumulate, and 48 feels like this big, giant number, the more I know people who didn't make it to 48, or who, you know what I mean? Like, it's a gift. Like, it's a gift to get a turn around the sun every time we get one. So I'm grateful for that. Gosh, something that, so like, I want you to clarify your whole being person. Like, every time you see them, you're around them. I mean, that felt like a pretty big.
Okay. Right.
Let's qualify. Okay.
Yes, I'll reframe. Mm-hmm. Yeah. To clarify, the undercurrent of your feeling for them is love. And then there's a vacillation every now and then because, you know, people or pets.
Or pets, right.
Does that help?
Yes, that does. Because, of course, my son, but not like every time. But I more thought along the lines of my gratitude. My mom's been gone 20 years and I have nothing but gratitude that she was my mother, is still my mother in a way different, harder way to communicate with. But and I was fortunate enough for the 27-ish years that I had her to always be, you know, minus years 14, 15, and 16, like pretty much leading up to those years. And then after those years, we were always pretty good. Like, you know, I didn't have any shit with her. So I would say for like a loving, peaceful presence, that's what I would go with. But of course, my son. But of course, Michael.
He's within earshot, isn't he?
Yeah. No, right.
Thank you, Maura. Thanks for sharing that. That's really tender and really sweet. Thank you. Jazz, hello.
Hey, everyone. It's good to be here. I'm Jasmine. I'm from New Jersey. I'm really grateful that Joel will continue, my husband, to experiment with game food until I really enjoy eating it. It sounds silly, but I didn't grow up like hunting or fishing or eating wild game. And I don't always like love a venison roast. And he's been making such a conscious effort. And tonight we had a roast that was amazing. It was amazing. And he's very, very consistent with his efforts to, you know, have me enjoy the fruits of the labor. So I'm really grateful for that. It was nice. And something, I didn't think of a person at first.
That's okay.
I thought of literally playing soccer when you said like love and excitement, and that felt pretty selfish. It is ingrained in my soul. It is the fiber of my being. I like driving there. I'm excited. Warming up, I'm pumped. Doesn't matter who I'm playing with. I love them. I don't know. That is the first thing that came to mind. If I can, obviously think of a person, but is that acceptable or should I go person?
I love that you shared that, and I'm going to invite you to share a person.
Okay. The first person that came to mind when I switched gears was my grandfather, who was like a father, because I didn't have one growing up, and just the epitome of love and support and just a model. Yeah, very consistent, strong model in a lot of different ways. That would be my person.
That's so sweet. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was more so the target area I was going for, so thank you. Not that soccer isn't awesome, because it's. Let's see here. Ash, hey, how are you?
Hello. I'm good. I'm doing well. I am Ashley, for those of you who don't know, and I'm in Los Angeles. And something I'm grateful for today, I've had a little bit of an off week, and so I'm just grateful for my husband in pushing me to, like, get out of the house or take walks or, like, let's go drive to the beach and sit there for a little bit, even though it's really cold here and foggy, but it helps. So I'm just grateful for him and pushing me to do a little bit of some of that self-care. And I did yoga this morning, and that was really great too. But
wow.
I know it's been a while. Nice stretching in. But so that was cool. And in terms of somebody, well, the first person who came to mind, of course, I love my husband and all that too, but is my 5-year-old niece. She's just like this feisty little girl, and she's so amazing and so cute, and she's also just really full of love and projects it to, I mean, she lives in Texas, and obviously we're here in California, but she'll call and we'll spend like 2 hours on FaceTime. Like last weekend we just sat and colored, me and my husband. She's like, where's Uncle Mike? But it's just it's just the love, and then like her excitement around everything, and her, I don't know, her just excitement around life and everything. And then just, you know, wanting to sit there and talk to us for like hours and hours on end, and show us everything that she's doing. It's just really adorable. And that's who first came to mind whenever you said that. So.
That's so cute. I love that you have art parties and just hang out. That's so awesome.
She's been doing it the last couple of weekends. It's like, we're like, all right, well, there's like digital babysitting for you guys. But yeah.
Right?
Prop the phone up. We color. She colors. Show me your picture. It's adorable.
That's really sweet. You're such a good auntie. Aw, thanks for sharing that. Griffin, hey, good to see you here again. Yay.
Hey guys, how you doing?
Hi.
I'm Griffin. I'm currently in Napa, California. I am grateful for the fact, I'm grateful for something I don't presently have, which reminds me that I'm grateful of it usually, which is my health. I've been sick this week. And, it makes me realize how much I appreciate being healthy normally, because being sick is never fun. But I'm also grateful that I am on vacation from work this week. So I've been able to just, like today, I took 2-3-hour naps and it was lovely. So, so I'm hoping I am nipping this thing in the bud. I think it's just a cold, but there's always fears of everything else at this point. And I, from a love perspective, I have to say it's actually my whole family. It's not just a single person, because they've been so supportive. They know that I'm in the beginning of this process and have been so supportive of everything, and just open to, or just kind of create another safe space for me to talk about it, which, as Fawn knows, I'm someone who figures things out by kind of just spewing words until something makes sense. And so having them as a support system to just listen and help me work through things has been amazing. So I'm grateful for them and feel deep support and love for them as well.
Beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah. Joanne, good to see you here again as well. Welcome back.
Thank you. So I'm Joanne. I'm in Southern California, and this is only my second session, so I'm excited about this. My gratitude for today is my home. Ashley is my coach, and so she knows that I was recently evacuated from my house for the wildfires out here, and so thankful that our home is okay. We came home with, like, hardly any damage, and so it's while I loved our house prior to this, I love it even more now. So, so thankful for having a roof over our heads. But something or somebody that I really love, I know this is kind of like a canned answer, but I really mean it. My husband, it's something that I've been reflecting a lot about because just with the pandemic and everything going on, it's just amazing how I've grown, my love for him has grown through this experience, and we haven't killed each other or wanted to strangle each other through seeing each other every single day since March. Normally I travel a lot for work, so we have our breaks during that time, and we haven't had that opportunity to just have our own time really. And so, and through this experience, we've made it and we've come out stronger. So I'm so grateful for that.
Yay. Wow. That's amazing. I'm so happy to hear that. Yeah. That's at the beginning of this pandemic, there were a lot of coaches in my communities that were like curious about how this was going to impact relationship coaching and like and counseling, couples counseling. And I love seeing the closeness that's developed and like actually a lot of your relationships, a lot of the ladies in LFP, and I'm so happy to hear that, Joanne. That's really wonderful. Yeah. Yeah. Katie, good to see you. Thanks for being here. Yay.
Hi, I'm Katie. I'm in San Francisco. I am grateful for, surprisingly today, I'm grateful for my coworkers. My job has been super stressful lately, and I think everyone's stressed out, but sometimes these guys crack jokes, and it's just nice to have, like, a comedy break on some of these calls where we're all just trying to figure out what's going on. So that was something nice that happened today. And I love my mom and dad. I've had kind of a hard month, and they're just, you know, I know they love me unconditionally, and no matter how crazy I get, if I, you know, get snappy with them or anything, they're always supportive and they're always there for me, and super grateful because I know that's kind of, you know, not everybody has that. So it's just nice to like reflect and realize how lucky I am that I have that support system.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. Thanks for sharing that. I'm really grateful for that for you too, especially in these months, this craziness of this year, but like when times do get stretchy or hard or challenging, to have your parents to talk to is so great. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. And Layla, hey, welcome back to the party.
Good to see you. Hi. Thanks. It's so good to see you. It's been a really long time. Yeah. Yeah. I'm sorry I haven't been around as much. It's been a little hectic, but I'm really happy to be here. Really, really grateful. So, I'm grateful to be back. I think I've said that before as my gratitude. So I know it's a little repetitive and I thought about a lot of things and I had my answer prepared before I was on. But then after just like being put on the spot, I just thought of the first thing I can think of. And I think that's just being grateful. Is that I'm grateful to be here. It's been difficult for me to come lately, but I'm happy that I made the time this time and I'm able to see you and some new faces and familiar faces. So, and then something that I love, there's a lot that I love, but one thing that I love that I don't think I've ever been annoyed with or disliked was my dog. You know, no matter, he was the best. He was like, I still speak of him in the present tense, but he just always was like just so easy, easy dog and very loving. And, you know, anytime I would hold him, I just immediately felt better. I was just so present. So, that's one thing that I very, very much love always.
Thank you for sharing that. Oh, yeah. I'm like, I miss Big Boy too.
I know. I bring him on the Zoom call sometimes in our meeting.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's probably became enlightened as a result of just hanging around.
I think so too. I think he's been healthier because of the calls for sure.
Oh, bless you, Big Boy. Thanks for sharing.
That was a good question.
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm, awesome. It's related to, well, no spoilers. Thank you. Layla, you've been here the whole, since the first call, I think, right? I'm pretty sure.
I don't think I was at the very first call, the number one call.
The early days.
But definitely the early days, yeah. It was in 2018, like June 2018 was like my first meeting, June or July. It was that summer, yeah.
Awesome.
So I don't know how early that is for you, but I remember my first meeting was that time, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I love that you're here with us tonight. Thank you. Yay. All right. Yeah, and then we got a couple ladies calling in here. Hi, Amy. I don't know if you can unmute and say hello. I think you're driving from somewhere. Joyzy, maybe. There you are.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Hi.
I'm not driving. I'm just at my dad's, and it's kind of a little bit crazy over here right now. That's why I didn't want to. You know, I'm just not sure how long I can stay on, but I can definitely introduce myself. So I'm Amy. Let me see if I can put myself on video real quick. I'm Amy. Okay. I'm from Pennsylvania. And let's see, I'm grateful for, I'm actually grateful for my ex-husband. We have a really great relationship. He is supportive and, you know, does his job as a dad. And, you know, supports me as well. So, you know, like I had to call him last minute. I really wasn't sure how long I was going to be at my dad's tonight. I didn't think it was going to be like an all-nighter, but it might be. And, you know, I just had to call him and let him know, and it's fine. Like, not a big deal. He just takes things very easily. So that's good to have. And then who or what do I love? And of course, you know, multiple people come into my head, but I'm going to go with my friend. I have a really good friend. Her name's Kelly, and she is just one of those friends that is just so easy to talk to. Like, I've told her my entire life story, no holding back. She's completely non-judgmental. Like, she loves you no matter what. And she's always been there for me for like the past, you know, I guess I've known her about 10 years now. But yeah, just always very positive, you know, doesn't have the perfect life, but you would never know because she's just never negative. She's just always out to see what she can do for others. And I just, I love that about her. She's great. So.
So sweet. She sounds awesome. I'm so glad. Yeah. Oh, beautiful. I love that you have that in your life, that support and enthusiasm. Yeah. Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yay. Uh-huh. And Katrina, I think you're driving as well, but you are welcome to introduce yourself if you're able. She's driving up to Northern California, might have the kids in the car. Okay. Happy you're with us, Katrina. I know you're listening in. Yay. All right. That was everybody. Cool. Thank you, ladies, for introducing yourselves and sharing your loved ones with us. It's really heartwarming. We don't have a lot of, someone just popped up. We don't have a ton of casual conversation in LFP, obviously, because it's all virtual. And so I feel it important, like part of friendships and part of connections is knowing about like what matters to each other, right? And who you care about and who cares about you and who's in your circles and who's in your tribe or your family or your chosen family. And so I wanted to invite you to share that tonight so that we can all kind of get to know each other a little bit better and who you've got in your support system and who you love. But then also because we're going to be potentially tapping into that question again in a little bit here. So with no further ado, let's talk about ego. So there, how this all started, tonight's call, my motivation for it, a couple of clients had asked specifically about it in the last couple of months. And I don't talk a lot about ego in LFP, in the program or on our calls necessarily. I've like mentioned it here and there, but I haven't really gone into it in depth because there's so much. So, and I hadn't really found the framework to communicate it. So when I think it was Herky who asked me first, Herky or Sharon, but I was like, oh yeah, I'll just whip up a thing, you know, and give you a resource. And I realized that, like I said earlier, that's, I couldn't figure out how to put the pieces together in a way that made sense. So I went on this huge research binge in the last month and a half. I've read Lord knows how many books and academic papers and spiritual texts and like things just to see how other people explain this and also get a sense of the kind of the common opinion about this or the common understanding about this, because there's the, you know, the Freudian end of the spectrum that essentially demonizes ego and superego and it and like created this architecture around the part of us that is like a total animal and the part of us that is like super reserved, and then there's like this little bit in the middle that's like balanced. So it was a start for psychology, but that's not accurate, obviously. And then there's the Stoic view of ego, that ego is the enemy and we should crush the ego and we should stay, you know, stay aligned with what we're doing and completely remove our subjective experience of things. And then there's the spiritual literature around ego, which is that ego is a manifestation of some things I'll be talking about tonight, and that ultimately it's a part of us. And it's a matter of understanding it more than it is about like crushing it or thwarting it. So there's all of this, these different kind of viewpoints on ego and what it is. And so it's a pretty heavily loaded term. And I think what most of us hear, right, and as it comes across our path, is that like ego is kind of a bad thing, right? If you're someone's in got an ego, we usually affiliate that with like, you know, the jock or maybe the president or maybe some, I don't know, something else altogether, the movie star. So what my intention is tonight is to give you ladies what I have found to be, and it aligns with what I've known to be accurate for myself for many, many years as I've studied this stuff. I want to give you a perspective of ego that isn't extreme, isn't just a checklist of rules to not do, but understanding of how this part of us emerges and how it takes shape when it emerges and what it's really here for and what it actually is and how we can utilize it to know ourselves better, know ourselves deeper, and also to course correct when we feel out of kilter with ourselves, whether we're feeling attacked by our gremlins or whether we're feeling like we are really attached to our performative outcomes. We're actually going to learn tonight that ego is our friend, which is a total myth bust for what most of the, a lot of at least the literature and the opinion out there says. So this is congruent, I will say, this is very congruent with the, like Eckhart Tolle and some of the Byron Katie stuff, Alan Watts, a lot of the spiritual literature, the non-dogmatic spiritual literature, so Taoism, Buddhism, and also I was like devouring academic papers. It turns out there's this really amazing relationship between mindfulness, self-compassion, and ego, interestingly enough. So I'll unpack that in a few minutes here too. So who had an opportunity to take the self-compassion assessment that I sent out today? No worries if you didn't, because I sent it out like just before the call. Okay, cool. Oh, yay. Some of you did. Awesome. Yay. So that assessment is to give you a sense of where your self-compassion falls on that spectrum from very self-compassionate to not very self-compassionate. This is probably going to be the next call, is the self-compassion call, because there is a through line that we'll be working through tonight that connects over there. And if your scores, raise your hand if your scores were lower than you had hoped. Was anybody like, oh, man, I wish I was more self-compassionate? Okay. Raise your hand if your scores were like pretty, you're like, yeah, that makes sense. That's where I am. Okay. And whose scores were like higher and you were like, oh, okay, I'm more compassionate than I thought. Okay, cool. So it felt pretty accurate where they landed. All right. So what we'll be talking about tonight and weaving into all of this as well is that mindfulness, which all of you have practiced or started practicing in your lives, mindfulness brings us into the present moment, and the present moment is where all of our answers are. It's where all of our answers will always be, and it's directly connected to self-compassion. Because in any present moment, any given moment, we can check in with how am I doing? What are my thoughts? What's going on? And we can choose in that second if we're fighting ourselves, beating ourselves up, tearing ourselves apart limb for limb. In that moment, we can come back to the center and we can use self-compassion to remember that we are whole, which is what I'll talk about next in just a second here. Before I get into wholeness, let's talk about not wholeness. Let's talk about gremlins. Hey, who would be willing to, I want to do like a round robin share right now, so I'll probably call on all of you. Who would be willing to share a gremlin that's up for them right now or tends to be a recurring gremlin, something that just like gnaws on you, pops up? Jasmine, thank you.
I'm down to one, and you are well aware of it. It is just I'm not good enough. So most of any struggle that I've been navigating, or I didn't even realize I was navigating up to this point, has now been explored down to what feels like that singular thorn, as I sometimes call it. And I can acknowledge it in a lot of different areas. But my self-compassion quiz was very high, and I totally attribute that to the work that I've been doing. So, so much love for myself, and I know that I'm whole and good enough, and that gremlin, I think, will be there and maybe present. Because it's not, I shouldn't even say that. Maybe not always, but yep, that's my gremlin. But I am good enough. But it's a motherfucker.
Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, so it sounds like conceptually, like you know, the you that's you knows that that gremlin is bullshit and that you are enough. But then the gremlin, it's still there. It's still like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Still like clinging to the to the story. Yeah, who can relate with Jazz, that particular gremlin? Like, I'm not good enough. Yeah, thanks for offering that up, Jazz, and I appreciate it. Who else has a gremlin to share with us? Anything that's like recurring or really just painful to hear.
Pronga.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly its name, or it's like, you know, Chaz was really concise. Just mine is that my family doesn't care about me. And by family, I mean the people who share my DNA. Because my family on the screen cares about me, and that's my chosen family. Thanks, Jeff. My family that looks like me, mostly, with some exceptions. So that's mine.
Thank you for sharing that. Yeah. Does that, actually, I'm going to dig a little bit deeper on that one. Are there any, ripple effects of that in terms of how you feel about yourself? Is there anything that's internalized around my family doesn't care about me?
Oh, it falls right into I'm not good enough. I mean, okay. So it's definitely feeds into it, you know, like it's either which is the cause and which is the effect. I'm not good enough and my family doesn't care about me, or my family doesn't care about me, so I'm not, or, you know, and then I'm not good enough. Or I'm not who they want me to be, or I'm not who, I don't know. Oh, but yeah, it feeds into the I'm not enough. Let's not even use the adjective good. Let's just say enough. I'm not enough.
Thank you so much for sharing that. Yeah, that's usually where it all starts, is like family, super, super early on. I'll touch on that in a second, but I really appreciate you speaking to that, Maura. Thank you. Anybody else have a gremlin or a limiting belief? Anything that... Layla, yeah, thank you.
I'm sure this has a lot to do, like, rooted with, like, not feeling enough, but I think, like, I have... if I have a relationship and then they do something that, or like there's like some kind of behavior that I don't like, for example, if one of my friends talks really negatively about another friend, in my mind, I'm like, okay, you're hurtful. I don't want to be around you anymore. And it's like, I think that I go into a really negative place with that, and I put too much expectation on that relationship. And rather than like trying to understand what that is, you know, I think I go down a very negative spiral, and then I'm finding that like there's so many relationships where I'm like really, I carry a lot of negative feelings towards, a lot of anger and judgment towards them. And I'm sure that has less to do with them and more to do with my response to something that happened. If that makes sense.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. Mm. So it sounds like there's like an automatic kind of shut off and judgment that happens quickly, and it's strong.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. Is there anything that
and it doesn't
is internalized?
When I really reflect on it, doesn't feel right.
It doesn't feel it doesn't feel.
Yeah, it's definitely internalized. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, what does the internalized version of that sound like? Like, I'm.
What does it sound like if it's an internalized version of that? A lot of it, I mean, when I really like think about it, and I might be wrong because I'm still trying to figure it out. And I'm talking to my therapist about it lately too. And like, I think when I really look at it, it's like, I could be just hanging out in the kitchen and cooking, and then I think about that person and like something that they did. And it's not always like, some of it is kind of like not, a lot of it's not cool. Mm-hmm. But like I like replayed in my head over and over again, and I think like, oh my God, they're such a terrible person for doing that, you know. And that gets replayed in my head, and I think that there is less attention on like, what can I do to be better myself, or what can I be accountable for? It's like, maybe I should talk to that person instead, you know. But a lot of it's reflected on external stuff. And that, to me, I don't think is a healthy way for me to, you know, deal with that. You know, I think I'm hard on them rather than just focusing on myself and what I can do in response to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you so much for clarifying. Yeah.
Yeah. I hope it makes sense.
Sounds like, I think I'm tracking. So it sounds like there's a lot of focus on the external and how not okay this is or how wrong they are or like what just like the feels are outward toward them. And there's maybe a rumination that happens or like a focus that happens that takes you out of not only your experience, but also kind of hijacks your ability to control your experience in the moment with yourself, like with your own thinking. Yeah. If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. Mm-hmm.
Can I ask a question on that actually? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
All right. No, you're good. Go ahead.
If it's okay, Leila, on that one.
Yeah.
So I experienced something very similar. I had something happen with a best friend of mine 2 years ago, and I still think about it. And, like, we have in theory gotten over it, but every time I see her, it's all I think about. And one of the things I've kind of learned is I set really high expectations for my friends because it's my way of keeping them at bay just enough so I can, you know, keep them from getting too close. And I'm wondering if there for you is anything like that as well. Cause it's one of my defense mechanisms.
So you say like you keep them at bay so you don't maybe avoid getting hurt again by that person.
For me, it's a little bit more of, I'm worried that they can see kind of my true self, better than I can and see things that I may not want to see. So it's my way of pushing people far enough away so they can't get close enough to see that. But it could, for many others, I imagine, be also a way to avoid the future possibility of getting hurt.
That's interesting. Thanks for sharing that and asking. I didn't think about it that way. But I have to reflect and see if maybe there is some of that there. Because, you know, I think that there's a lot subconsciously going on that I'm unaware of with this. For me, so I don't experience that I'm aware of, but I think that if I reflected a little bit, that might be there. Because when I think about it, I don't really want people to see that I'm upset, or I don't want people to see that I'm struggling through that. And I don't see them very often. Because like I know like I'm not excited to see them, but we're still kind of friends, we're still kind of family members, but I'm not excited to see them. But I do see them because we're family or we're friends, and it's unresolved. But I'm not very active about going out of my way to see those people. And I think that maybe a part of it is that because I definitely don't want them to see that I'm upset. I definitely am avoiding getting hurt too again. Yeah. Thanks for bringing that up. I don't know if that answers your question.
No, it was just something to kind of ruminate on a little bit. Thank you for letting me ask it, but it's something I'm starting to realize in the same way as you are that the thing I think it is usually just something preventing me from admitting what it really is. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thanks for that, Griffin. I appreciate your openness and sharing that recent realization. And Leila, thanks for your receptivity and putting that one in the pocket to consider and see what might come up for you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyone else feel called to share a gremlin or something that, yeah, thank you, John.
I'll share one that's, I would say has gotten better, but still affects me periodically, would be just feeling that I'm not prepared when I step into a situation. And, you know, I'll have nightmares about it. I'll wake up in a panic sometimes feeling like, oh my gosh, I didn't do this, or I'm not prepared going to that. So, but I feel like I've been working through it a lot better. through that whole thoughts and beliefs and stories activity and exercise. But, you know, when I feel unprepared, I think I don't feel confident. It affects that and affects whether, you know, I'm good enough, I guess, as a result. So that's my gremlin.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for sharing that. Who can relate to that one? I definitely can. Yeah, I appreciate that. I'm going to dig just a little bit deeper. You're welcome to share or not share, Joanne. So when you have that feeling of being unprepared and it has you feeling less confident, what does that mean if you're unprepared? Like, what is the story that's inside of that?
Criticism or being judged as, you know, you don't know your stuff or you don't know what you're talking about or, you know, just having the respect maybe that I feel like I deserve.
Mm-hmm. So judgment from like external, I'm guessing external people.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Okay.
But I'm trying to work on not being, what is that term, unfuckable with or what is it?
Unfuckwithable.
Unfuckwithable. Yeah. I can't even say it, but that's what I'm working on.
It's a tongue twister.
Yes.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah, great. Okay. Thank you for clarifying that. That's great. Okay. Anybody else feel called to share something that just like not super helpful or positive that goes on in your mind, in your emotions? Okay.
I can real quick.
Thanks, James.
Okay, so I have about, I still feel like I have a ton of gremlins that pop up throughout my life. A big one right now, and I don't know if it stems back to the one that we did the work on, which is I'm not smart enough. And I don't necessarily say that as much anymore, but sometimes I just feel like I'm not capable. And I feel like it's kind of almost the same thing. You know, I'm trying so hard to do this whole business thing and I just want it so bad. And then there's times where I just feel like I'm just overwhelmed and I don't know where to start. I don't know how to end. I don't know. And then I just start to feel, I can't do this. It's just, I'm not capable to do this. This just isn't my path. And then I was just thinking while everyone was talking and listening to them. And there's part of me that was trying to think of why I would feel this way. And I don't know if it has anything to do with it, but I was thinking back to when my kids were younger. And I just felt like I was capable. I felt like I was a really good parent. I was a really good mom for my kids when they were young. Like I just did so much with them and was, you know, always had them outside and was always playing with them and just exploring with them and teaching them about nature and just very much like a hippie-ish kind of mom, which, you know, that's not how I was raised. So I went a completely different way, read lots of books and, I don't know if it's because they're so much older now. And I don't know. There's a little bit of emptiness, I think, in me. I just miss it so much. So that's my gremlin, just feeling not capable. And I think it boils down to, you know, what Jasmine said, just not enough. I think a lot of them can kind of boil down to that. Yeah. Not capable enough, not smart enough, not enough.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing that. I appreciate the context around it too. And that you're asking yourself, like, what would have me feeling this way? And being able to kind of connect some dots around the feelings around being a mom and the kids. And that's, I appreciate your openness to, like, looking into the gremlin cave and going, what's going on? Who's in there? Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay, so to kind of on to the next step of this. So for each of you who shared your gremlins, I'm going to ask a question and I'm going to call on you. We're going to kind of accelerate just a little bit for the sake of time, but this question is really important and then we'll go into another section here. So what does you, now that we've put our gremlins into the light, what does your gremlin tell you that you need to do in order to be the thing it's telling you you're not? So whether it's you're not good enough or you're not enough or you are too harsh of a judge on your friends or everyone's going to judge you because you're not prepared. What is it telling you that you need to do to be enough?
I'll go first on that one.
Awesome. Thank you.
I don't know if I really, in my question, articulated mine, but I'm kind of still framing it a little bit. But my gremlin is that I don't really know who I am, and I'm afraid to find out who it is. And I don't trust that I'll love that person when I do. And so I have basically created a facade of my life that is fully in control, full of armor, that basically has created a person that I can be okay with and prevent me and define myself. That's everything from, you know, we talked about it last time, being achievement driven, my achievements define me, the way I look defines me, all in an effort to kind of, be comfortable with my definition of myself, but with any rigid control, with any armor comes rust and kinks. And so anytime I feel like my armor is starting to fall apart, I just get even more controlling. And living in a highly controlled life is also just frankly exhausting. So, it's, you know, there's a lot of different things that make me feel isolated, that make me feel unhappy, all because I'm afraid of finding out what's on the inside.
Thank you, Griffin. Really, really appreciate that share. Big time. Is there anything in that architecture or in that gremlin that's had a strong message about, like, this is what you need to be whole? Was that, or maybe it was the entire, like, thing that you built. Maybe that was the kind of callback to this is what wholeness is.
Yeah, the feeling is that I need to keep that facade up at the expense of, you know, at all costs, kind of, which comes to this kind of secondary gremlin, which I'm grappling with right now, and I can't. This is what I'm trying to figure out this week and I'm struggling, but it's this feeling that I don't trust myself in some ways. And so I have to basically just be as controlled as possible because I don't know what'll happen if I'm not. But the trust one is, I'm having a hard time digging into it, like where it came from or, but it's there and it's strong. It's got its teeth in pretty deep.
Gotcha. Thanks for sharing that. So the control is the, like, that's, like, better keep things in control or else it's going to fall apart. It's going to be a mess. Yeah. Who can relate with Griffin? Any relatability around that, like needing to have things a certain way or, like, make sure it's all, yeah, looking the way it's supposed to, et cetera. Thank you. Anyone else? I'll take like one person. What does your gremlin tell you you need to do in order to be enough or to not be the gremlin? Maura.
It was funny because I didn't have it quite that way because I wrote down, if my gremlin says my family doesn't care about me, then the opposite to that is, well, then pick a new family. So it's like, Which is when I'm happiest, right? Is when I'm with the family that I choose. It doesn't mean that the gremlin doesn't come back and say, you know, it's still there, it's underlying, but it's a, because then I do feel more whole, then I do feel more accepted and more loved. But I have to recognize that that's not to be taken for granted either, right? So like the should of your family should love you and just should unconditionally sort of stand by you and care and all the rest of it has not proven itself true to me in recent years. So then if I find the folks that make me feel enough, make me feel loved, everything like that, that's not a foregone conclusion either. So I'm sort of jumping ahead to then I have to really maintain that and support that. So if I'm going to accept that my family is what they are and I've tried certain things or I've made my efforts and maybe this just is what it is, which is sort of like a punch in the gut, but maybe it is what it is. Okay. Well then pick a new family and make sure you don't let that happen again. Mm-hmm. I guess. Mm-hmm. Take control of it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for offering that up. Yeah, that sounds like a much more empowered like version of it, for sure. And I'm going to go in a bit of a different direction with you more quickly here. So the gremlin that tells you that your family, that you're not enough, that you're not good enough, because your family doesn't want to be around you or doesn't give you the attention that they should. Is there a part of you that feels like you need to do something, like, or that something's wrong with you that you need to fix or anything?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but that's at odds with what I'm not willing to compromise on.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know?
But there is like a little like a little gnawing in there.
Oh yeah.
That yeah.
Sure.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. I mean, right. So it's the conflict of that. Right.
Yeah. Because usually if we have a gremlin, just to like people here, usually if we have a gremlin, like I'm not good enough or I'm never gonna be successful or I'm not smart or look at me, you know. Who's gonna want me? Whatever our gremlins are, and we all have our set of them, there's behind that message, that gremlin, there's like some kind of in this, even if it's an assumption or a shadow of a gremlin, on the other side of that, it's a story that you should be like, in order to be enough, you need to be, do, or have this, or in order to be, actually confident, you need to be prepared every single time and you need to show up at work and you need to impress everybody and blow their minds and like have the best presentation in the place, right? So there's usually some kind of a story that's running behind the gremlin that we don't really catch. We catch that first part and we just hear it beat us up and we don't even think to ask like, well, what does it want me to do? What is it trying to get me to do, right? To stop beating me up. So that's kind of what I was wanting to tease out there. It's a great question to check in with whenever a gremlin pops in is like, okay, whatever the thing is. And then, so what would it take in order for you to go away? This, like, if I were to like play this game by your rules, Mr. Gremlin or Mrs. Gremlin, what are you really trying to get me to do here? What are you telling me I need to be in order for you to go? So that's one kind of just like one piece of it, something to keep in mind and check in with, because usually what we'll find if we follow that line of thinking or if we get really curious, it'll be telling us some stuff that's just like really not in the real world or really not rational. And it will taper off when we shine that flashlight on the end of it. So for the sake of time, I'm going to cruise forward here, but anyone who's curious about doing that process, I'm totally here. Yeah, Jess.
I just want to say something that just came up real quick when you were saying that, something that's helped me, and I don't know if it would help any of you, is right in line with what you're saying, Fawn. I think it was on a podcast somewhere, but it's just the question of, like, what if I didn't? Or, like, if the gremlin is saying, like, I'm not good enough at work because I didn't get my master's in math. And so the gremlin is saying, go back and get your master's in pure and applied. What if I didn't? And I've been doing that a lot to myself. Like, what's the expectation of the gremlin? And then what if I didn't? What if I don't do what you say? And I don't know where that question came from, and I don't know why it stuck, but I don't know. It's helped me. And it just like what you were saying, just like that's, what if I don't do what you say? And what if I don't follow that path? Will it all crumble? And the answer is usually no, because the gremlin's fucking crazy and it's not real and it's fake. And I could just stab it in the eye if I want, because it's not real. So I'm not going to, because what if I didn't? Nothing will happen. You're an asshole. You're the devil on my shoulder. Go away.
Sorry.
I love that. I feel like I think all of us need to just sample that recording and have it with us when our gremlins pop out. You're an asshole. Get out of here. Thank you. And yes, you're right. You are right. It's all just a story that we have in our heads. So, all right, let's talk about ego. How does ego fit into all of this? I'm going to give you guys a little historical context. We're going to go back into some questions and some experiencing. So here's the deal, ladies. Big reveal. I mentioned this on the last call, and I've been talking about this on my, or at least my last Facebook Live. You're already whole. You're already enough. You can never not be enough, and you can never not be whole, no matter what you do. Even if you went out, decide to move into the forest and collect butterflies for 5 years, you're still whole and you're still enough. As a creature, as an entity, as a conscious person, human being, you are whole and you are enough. You can never not be. So when we look at the natural world, when we look at animals and we look at flowers and we look at trees and we look at everything else in this world, we usually look at the thing and we never think to ourselves, that kitten is not enough, or that rose over there is not enough. Now, if we're looking at the world through like a critical eye and we're blah, 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 then yes, but we've been trained to do that. So what's true though in the natural world is that each and every thing, even the amoebas, even the worms, like it's whole. It's what it is, right? It can't not be a worm. Like Mora cannot not be a Mora. I can't not be a fawn. So that innate wholeness that you have is your birthright. And I used to get really annoyed at that term because like a lot of woo-woo shit uses that terminology. But literally, by nature of you are like existing in this world as a byproduct of this world, you are whole. It's impossible for you not to be. What happens, and this is not universal. This doesn't happen in every culture. This doesn't happen throughout history. It didn't happen for a long time until certain cultures arose. What happens is that at some point in time, some folks started realizing that it's really helpful to tell other folks that they're not whole. And that in order to gain their approval and gain their security and their safety, they had to follow by the rules. They had to start playing the game by whatever the other party wanted them to play. Now, that's a perfect storm because in all the research that I have done in the past and also recently, this theme comes up again and again and again and again. And this theme is that as babies, basically, as new humans in this world, we have a primal, most important need to survive. That is like we want to make it. We got here. We're like, let's stay here. And that need, that biological, perfect thrive mode that we have to survive and then so that we can thrive. It has a necessity for safety and it has a necessity for security. That is our most primal need. And we arrive here with those needs, right? We die if we don't. Pretty simple. And part of that safety and that security throughout thousands of years, I've talked about this before, so I'll keep it short, is that if we are rejected, we die. So if we don't do, essentially, if we don't do what we're supposed to do, or if we're not performing in the way that we're told or expected to perform, we get rejected. And we may not get rejected physically, right? Or we may still be in the household, or we may still be in the culture scape or what have you, but we get rejected emotionally. We get rejected energetically and emotionally. And we essentially start out our journey here with this, believing this lie, because we don't know any better, that we're not whole, that in order for Fawn to be, in order for me to be me and like be aligned with that and accepting of that, and like be a friend of myself and come from a place of wholeness instead of lack, that's all taken away when we're told that we're worse or we're better based on our performance. So comes back to this. I know this theme comes up a lot because it's really the root of so much of this stuff. So what develops is what we call ego. And the ego is essentially the story of the self. So a healthy ego is balanced and knows that it's whole, and it's pretty quiet. Like, it doesn't really pop up very often, but it's still like, it's still kind of there checking things out. It's basically the mechanism that develops as a byproduct or as an artifact of how separated we are from our wholeness at the beginning of our journey. And the more separated we are from our wholeness, and the more conditions there are and judgments there are about our goodness and our badness, our security or our not security, the more dynamic the ego gets. So instead of being centered and balanced, it starts to develop this polarity to it, where we gain this overly, this exaggerated sense of self-importance in either direction of that balance of wholeness. Either I'm not good enough, and therefore I'm rejected. Like, there's a feeling to rejection, right? There is a feeling when we feel like someone that we really care about, that like we care about their opinion or their judgment or their love, there is a feeling to that not enoughness. And because all things considered, right, like I am not enough is an objective thing. If I'm not enough, I'm not enough. If I don't have an emotional attachment to that, then it's just like, oh, guess I'm not enough. Moving on, right? But we have this emotional attachment to this. We have this personalized experience around our not enoughness. And on the other end of the spectrum, we have this superiority where we're programmed to achieve, 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 do, 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 be the best, be the prettiest, be the most popular, make me happy, all that stuff, or culture scape or whatever. But there is a ton of yay, right? If we're like not just good and balanced and whole, but if we're like more than whole, like the whole thing is about like be the best, be the top, right? Get all the great grades and get the best job and have the life, right? It's everywhere in our culture. So we develop this like enormous contrast between this like, I'm the king or the queen of the whatever, or like I'm a total failure. And when this develops, there's not a lot of center to it. It starts to become this paradigm around I'm either the best or I'm a failure. I'm either superior or I'm inferior. It's this false dichotomy that develops, and we never don't really stop to think like, what if I'm enough? Right? We're just like, it's either one or the other. So this all develops as a mechanism, though, and this is what I mean by befriending our ego, is that if we know how to listen and pay attention, the ego is actually a signal to us. It's like kind of like stepping on the scale or like tuning an instrument, where if, you know, the numbers are over or under, then we're like, oh, maybe I should like get back on my health kick, or tuning an instrument. Oh, I need to like turn the thing a little bit more so it's like hitting that, you know, that whole note that I'm going for. So our ego, if we're feeling inferior, if we're feeling not enough, if we're feeling inadequate, if we're feeling ashamed, if we're feeling self-critical, if we're feeling guilt can sometimes be a part of this. Not all guilt is this, but sometimes can be. All of that is our beautiful, amazing internal intelligence signaling us, hey, you're off course. You drifted over there. Can you come back? Like, you need to come back here. Like, this, you're in pain right now. You're in emotional pain. You're in emotional detachment and separation from your wholeness. And that's why it feels like shit. when our gremlins are like having at it, it feels like shit, because if we hit our foot on the wall or broke our toe or something, it's our system saying, hey, like, you need to pay attention to this and like get it to healthy again, right? So turns out the ego, if we can relate with it and utilize it as a signaling system, all it's ever telling us is that we're out of balance, is that we forgot that we're already whole. And no matter what, even if everybody in our family rejects us, even if we don't get the job, even if we don't know who we are and we're wandering around and we're trying to figure that out, that's okay, because we're already whole. It's nothing is wrong with us. Nothing is like missing. We're not weirdos. We're human. But we're literally conditioned in a completely different architecture that does not support this point of view at all, because then there's this like, well, how would we get people? How would we get the lemmings to do the things and turn the wheels? How would we get the high achievers to like kick ass in the corporate workplace and work 70-hour weeks, 80-hour weeks and make us a bunch of money, right? Like, how would we get society to function for us if we didn't shame the shit out of everybody from the moment they arrived, right? So not to speak poorly of any religion, but like there is a massive difference between coming into this world and being told you arrive with original sin and that you're essentially like immediately in deficit and that you need to do a whole bunch of stuff in order to be like loved in the eyes of God versus arriving here and you are made in God's image and you are perfect and whole and you can never not be. So there's a lot of misinformation. I'm not blaming anybody. The super weird thing about humans is that we're really impressionable and really gullible and really malleable, as I think we're probably noticing more so than ever in our culture. And so this condition, this architecture that's been handed down to us over thousands of years now is it's repetition. History repeats itself. Humans repeat themselves, especially when those in power have something to gain, or especially when there's an education system, not literal education system, but kind of an overall system that really supports and like feeds this part of us that is the superior, inferior complex. So, you know, getting people to achieve and do all of these things because they believe it's going to make them feel better about themselves. It's like a dangling carrot. It's a total mirage. It's a total like catch 20 or a total bait and switch. So as probably a lot of you have noticed, even when we are like kicking ass from this place of like superiority and achievement and like being the best or like doing really well, it's never satisfying. It's never like, okay, now I'm whole. Like, I feel great about myself. I'm good now. You know, if it's coming from that place, it just never happens, right? It's like, I think Griffin mentioned this on the last call, the escalator, the constantly going, like going up the escalator that never stops. And that's because we can never get our wholeness from anything external. We can never get our enoughness from anything external. It's like, we can't. Because we're already whole. It's like me telling this glass of water, hey, you should be more of a glass of water by telling yourself you should be a glass of water. And no, it doesn't make sense. So I really just wanted to like rip the Band-Aid off of this, expose this for what it is, because it's literally an architecture in the system. It has nothing to do with your value. It has nothing to do with your worth. And what I want to invite you to do is start to parse apart and delineate and separate objective from subjective. Because what the ego does, it's real tricky, is it points things inward to us. It makes us feel, again, overly self-important, overly responsible for what's happening, whether it's good or bad. And that's how we start to, instead of being like, well, my family doesn't want to hang around me. My family doesn't care about me. I must not be enough for them. Those are all objective statements, right? But because we're human, we attach our self-worth to that. We attach our belongingness. We attach our primal biological need for survival, which is mortifying when it's gone, starts to attach to that. So, but we don't have to. We don't have to, because we're already whole. So not taking things personally is like this thing that's thrown around, right? Like, don't sweat the small stuff, or don't take it personally, or, you know, whether it's good or bad. That it's so important. Like if you are sweating the small stuff, if you're taking things personally, if you're like ruminating on like, what's wrong with me? What's my deal? Oh my God, like whatever the thing is, whatever those gremlins are, it's just a story. It's, and I know I say that all the time, but like literally though, it's a misinterpretation of the information. You're fine. You're whole. You're great. Now, is there feedback all around us all the time? Yes. So I might step on the scale and be like, oh goodness, right? If I can approach that from a whole place of wholeness, okay, well, looks like I need to like get back to it and start eating healthy again. And I'm glad I caught it before it got like too far, versus like, oh my God, like I'm so disgusted with myself, and like, what's my problem, and why can't I stay on track with my health, and like, I'm such a loser, you know, like the whole spiral that happens when whatever our specific gremlins are get triggered. So it comes down to like a decision when you find, so the ego is an information system. It's actually our friend. If we can like, hey, I see you over there. You're telling me I'm out of balance. Okay, let's come back to the center. If we can relate with it like that, that's great. That's what it's there for. But if we don't, obviously things get spun way, 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 way out of control. So it comes down to a decision of when we, first of all, noticing. So that's why I'm always asking about like, hey, who wants to share their gremlins? Because our gremlins are, and it's a gremlins. The reason I chose that languaging way back is because externalization is really powerful. It's really helpful to like get the thing into like an image or a concept or something. So, but calling out our gremlins and like doing that inventory and doing an audit of our gremlins is like, that's the awareness, right? But now we know like, oh, our gremlins are just these like layers of bullshit that we didn't know any differently, but we definitely took it on and forgot that it's actually not us. And so, but it comes down to a decision. And I've probably emphasized this with a few of you along our journeys, because it's kind of one of those like come to Jesus conversations, no pun intended, where you have to decide. You have to decide, am I going to co-sign and endorse this game, this yo-yo dance of insecurity to false security? Am I going to entertain the personalized messages from these gremlins? Or am I going to draw a line, decide for myself, no more, I'm over it. They're still going to pop up, of course, because we're creatures of habit, but the difference being I'm going to listen to it and believe it, even like maybe kind of sort of believe it, versus like, no, hell no, no more of this. Like, I see you. You've been around for a long time. You're out of here. That decision is the most powerful choice, the most powerful ability we have as human beings is that moment. And that's why the present moment, to circle this all back around, present moment is so important and so powerful, because we're able to catch ourselves gremlining, egoing out, and we get to come in with self-compassion. So that's why I had all of you take that self-compassion assessment today. Self-compassion on the next call, but it's essentially, it's the medicine. It's like the real medicine to bring us back to our wholeness, to bring us back to equilibrium, to bring us back to a place of thriving from flow versus achieving from fear. And there's a lot of amazing transformation that happens when we choose to be self-compassionate with ourselves. But keyword being choose. We have to choose self-compassion. And we're not going to get it right every time. We're not going to like catch it every time. We're going to find ourselves down some pretty gnarly guillotines. But we will at some point remember, oh yeah, self-compassion. So the reason that I had you all conjure up somebody that you really love at the beginning of this call is the way that you view them, the way that you hold them in your heart, the way that you hold them in your being, in your spirit, that is what self-compassion can be for you, can be for yourself. And that's where I want to invite all of you to explore in the next couple weeks, between now and the next call, is what would it be like? What would it be like if I, and you can conjure up that person or people or animal and like feel the feels that you feel for them. Like really do it. Like I do it with Silvio all the time. I look at Silvio and I just melt into a complete mess. I love him more than I knew it was possible to love anything. And I'm like, oh, especially in the morning when he's cuddly. Oh my God, that's so cute. And I remember, I'm like, it's like, they say this a lot in a lot of the super wise traditions, that when somebody, it's love seeing itself and looking at itself in this beautiful infinite loop. And it's only our humans that get in the way. So see what comes up for you as you try this on in the next couple of weeks, because things can come up. And also, you have full permission to let go of the bullshit operating system that's been running, like full permission. And what's really great is that when we let go and when we're like, oh, thank you, ego. Okay, now I'm, you know, coming from a place of wholeness, and we let go of all the stress and the anxiety and the conditionality and the self-criticism and the self-judgment. Like when we let go of all that stuff, first of all, it feels relieving. Second of all, if there's any part of you that's worrying, like, oh, but will I still be a high performer? Will I still get shit done? Will I still like care about anything if I'm coming from a place of wholeness? The answer is yes. You're designed to. Like, you're designed to thrive. And like paradoxically, by trying to play by any external rules, you're kind of getting in your own way of thriving. So see what it's like to play from a place of wholeness, from a place of self-compassion, a place of kindness. I wrote something down related to self-compassion that I wanted to read. Okay. So self-compassion, there's aspects of it I'll go into on our next call, of course, but kindness, forgiveness, and acceptance are key indicators that self-compassion is there, right? So think about that person you love. If they were like, oh, I didn't plan enough, I didn't prepare enough for the presentation, or if they were like, my family just doesn't, they don't want me, or I don't know who I am, right? If someone you really love is telling you any of this, how are you going to feel towards them immediately? Probably pretty kind and forgiving and accepting and like loving, and like, oh gosh, come here. So turn that toward yourself. as often as you can, and you don't need an excuse to do it. Who cares what anybody thinks? it's the most important thing in your life. So there's that. And the three things that Kristen Neff talks about in her self-compassion research that are really great, like medicine for this, to come back to wholeness, to come back to self-compassion. So when we find ourselves being self-judgmental, dropping into self-kindness, so understanding, forgiving, benevolence, right? So being kind to ourselves. When we find ourselves, and this is a big one, because we isolate, and we start to feel like when we're in ego land off either pole, we tend to like isolate and like, me, 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 I am wrong, something's flawed, or like, I'm achieving, me, 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 right? So me, 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 isolated. And that's not how we're built. We're our independent, like high achieving self. Look what it's doing to our culture. I think we're seeing what it's doing to our culture, that we've been such like individualistic society. So when we feel that isolation or over-identification coming to common humanity, so everybody goes through this. Oh yeah, everybody like forgets to prepare sometimes. Like, oh yeah, everybody, like most families have family members that are like on a trip. So that common humanity is so powerful. And then I know we're at time here, but the over-identification piece, that's the part that like the ego can really get off on if we're not careful, is like the woe is me, the internalizing, the like something's wrong, and on the opposite end, like way too self-important. And it's not, I think it's trying to signal, when it gets that extreme, it's trying to signal to us like, hey, like I'm way out here out of balance. So depression, you know, self-sabotage, that kind of stuff, or like pride, narcissism, et cetera. So the way to come back from that and come back to center is mindfulness, right? So, ooh, I'm feeling on this end or on this end, like I better achieve or what have you, or a piece of crap because I don't achieve. Coming back to the present moment, mindfulness meaning accepting the now, accepting ourselves. I am who I am, I'm whole, and coming back to that kindness, coming back to the present moment. And checking in with our thoughts and our feelings and our body, you know, our sensations, and just like checking in with like, okay, what's going on, gremlins? Let's hear it out. What's happening? Grab the journal. Or what Jasmine does. You scream at the gremlin. But nonetheless, just like acknowledge what's happening, but don't indulge it, right? Don't let it hijack your love for yourself. So it's kind of part one of the two-part series. And this is like, this is some Jedi stuff, you guys. Like, if when we can learn that and use ego as like a barometer instead of like a how good enough we are barometer to, oh, how far have I drifted from my remembrance of my wholeness? When we can use that in that way and come back to self-compassion when we feel off kilter, oh my gosh, that's dropping into thrive mode. That's putting you back in the driver's seat of your life, where you're no longer living from reaction, but you're living from a place of alignment and desire and creation, which is, I think, what we're all up to in on this journey, LFP, coaching, etc. So, all right, I just unpacked a lot on you, ladies. I appreciate you listening. This stuff is really important to me, obviously. I mean, it all is, but this stuff is super fucking important. It honestly changed my life 10 years ago when I really started shifting my understanding of self and taking things seriously and personally. I would not be doing this right now if I was still hung up on my ego shit as much as it was, and like my inadequacies and pedestalizing people and thinking that I could never be successful because bullshit, whatever. I wouldn't be here thriving. So it's super important. Anyone who has to hop off, totally understand. Thank you so much for being here. And anyone who'd be willing to share a takeaway or an insight or one way that you can balance into wholeness or self-compassion. I would love to do a takeaway round for that. So hands up if you need to hop off. Hands up if you need to hop off. Nope, nobody does. Okay, cool. Thanks, Lisa. Okay, I am going to put myself on mute and hand the mic over to I'll go with Jasmine.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you. I really enjoyed that. I think that my takeaway right now is I'm feeling very proud of the work that I'm doing to work on like my own awareness and consistency around that awareness. And that's been really powerful. And what you said that stuck the most tonight, I think, was, or what I wrote, was when I'm in an unhealthy ego place, it's not just on the I'm not good enough end. It's really just simply going with the whim of the feeling in the moment, positive or negative. So when I want to identify with any label, and that can be I'm not good enough, or that could be I'm X, Y, or Z, like in the great sense. And I think that when you strip that away, there's a fear of what Griffin was talking about with, but then who am I? If I have the I'm not good enough at work, but I have the I'm a great mother, if I strip all of that away, who am I? And I think it's a really beautiful thing if I'm at that place and I can say, I just am. I'm just whole. Like, I am, period. That's probably the most powerful position to own and to, like, love that without the label that I want to identify with, like, even on the positive side of the ego. So I want to just always come back to Rafiki. It is what it is. I am. Stop, good or bad. Stop it. Ba, ba, ba. Stop.
Ba, ba.
Yeah. Thank you.
Oh, that was powerful. Thanks, Jazz. Wow. The wonderful thing, too, is when you're in that space of I am whole, I am. Yes, you're a great mother. Yes, you're an amazing soccer player. Yes, you're an amazing tribe sister. We love you. And you're always whole, right? So there's so much more color in life when we come from a place of wholeness. It's like we can do great things, build empires, change the world, end hunger. Like, I hope we all get up to that in our lifetimes. We're doing it from a place of wholeness. We're not doing it from a place of, I need to do this in order to feel adequate, right? So, yeah. Thank you, Jess. That was really awesome. Maura, love to hear your thoughts.
Wow. I'm sorry that I missed some of that, Jazz. I had to parent. But I did look up, as you were saying, that I am. And I know we tend to stay away from religion and just stay with concepts of kindness, and not so much dogma. But immediately, as soon as you said that, it's one of the most enigmatic things that Jesus said was, I am who I am. That's it, right? He is. I am who I am. And it was, you know, it's been written on by many, many people. And it's always one of my favorites because it's this very human sort of response and divine from him and his teachings, you know, to commoners, to people who just needed to be reassured. So anyway, so you just prompted that whole sort of like divinity, only because I've been thinking a lot about sort of dogma and religion and like how, you know, I'm a practicing Catholic, but there's lots that I don't agree with and blah, blah, blah. So anyway, so there you go. So Jazz just gave me my takeaway in the last 30 seconds. Sorry, she totally spun me off.
Nice. Teamwork.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah, the that's one of the through lines of most spiritual traditions is this I am that I am. The omnipresent, everything is what it is all the time for infinity. I am that I am. There's a great Wayne Dyer talk on YouTube about this. I used to listen to it every night. Anyway, thank you, Mara. Ashley, take away. Ashley's like, I hear you preach this stuff all the time, Vaughn.
I actually was about to say, I know we've talked about this before, but I do still keep, so many things, but I do still keep coming back to like how it, you explain it when like we don't look at flowers or kittens or things and be like, they're not good enough. They're not, you know, enough or whatever. And that just resonates with me so much whenever thinking through my own, like, you know, why don't we just look, I am who I am. I am enough. I am whole and all of that. So that just, even from all of our time working together, that's always just really resonated with me and has been helpful for me. And so I just like hearing it again, but
yeah. Hey, oh, thanks for that feedback. And what you were sharing about your niece earlier, I was like, oh, that's such a touching example of like the way you were describing her and the tenderness and just like that pure adoration for her because she's right. And it's like, right. Let's shine that right back on ourselves. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Thank you. I had a feeling that's where you're going with that. but yeah.
Good job, Grasshopper.
Yeah. But it is like you said, it's just, yeah, that, you know, just looking at her with that admiration and adoration and all of that. So, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Katie, takeaway for you. You've heard me talk about this stuff a lot too. So.
Yeah. I know we talk a lot about it on our one-on-one calls, but I think for me, the thing that sticks out the most, like I feel like, you know, my ego has been telling me a lot of things this month and I'm like, you know, way off and it's starting to get exhausting, like, because I feel that like self-centered part of it. And it's really tiring and I'm definitely like, I'm ready to come back to the, you know, to the center where I'm like, okay, I'm good. Like, this is who I am. This is like fine with me. You know, practicing more self-compassion and just like not focusing on myself and just being able to like enjoy, you know, life a little bit more. Yeah. That was my takeaway.
Yeah, it is exhausting. Who can relate with that when we're just like in the either end of the spectrum? Yeah, thank you, Katie, for sharing that. And, you know, this might sound whimsical coming from a life coach or purpose coach, but just tell whatever. Like, whatever is coming up in the moment, be like, whatever. Like, you don't necessarily have to arm wrestle it. You can just kind of whatever it until it loses its frequency a bit. But yeah, thank you, Katie. Layla, takeaway.
Okay. I have two, if that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be quick. So one thing that really resonated with me was something that Griffin shared today was that not knowing who she is. And I think a lot of people can relate to that. And also being scared to see what that is. And what I saw today was something very beautiful coming from Griffin because you were being honest and sharing something that was vulnerable to you. And I saw what I liked. And the same thing goes with everybody else and the things that they shared today. I didn't look at anybody today the way I look at myself sometimes when my ego is on the side of the spectrum where I like hate myself. I had never for a moment, not today or any of our meetings, have looked at anyone here like that. So I think that also ties into the second thing that resonated. So it's kind of related, but was when Fawn, you shared that to look at yourself the way you look at the thing that you really, really love that we shared. And that was like, you know, that was very emotional for me because like, I don't, you know, with the people that I love, or in this case, my dog, like, especially the end of his, towards the end of his life, he needed a lot of help and constant care. And everyone was, not everyone, but some people were looking at me like, why do you stay up so late? Or why do you do all this research to care for him? He's old anyway. And I'm like, it's not even without a thought, you know? And at that time, he needed me a little bit more than before. And like, it was a pleasure to care for him while his life was good, you know? So like, there was not even a question, no matter how, like, what he was going through, or anybody else that I care about, what they're going through is like, I'll always love them, you know? So, and I know I shared my other stuff, and it's like, I'm kind of hard on some of the people that have been harsh towards me, but I still love them very much. That part definitely, like, look at yourself the way you look at someone that you really love and admire, or something you really love and admire, really resonated with me. And I was like, I don't practice that as much as I should, as much as I'd like to. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for sharing that. Oh.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So on that note, it's a great meditation to do. I'll talk about this in the self-compassion call, but to sit in either with your child self at 5 years old, 6 years old, like that age where we're impressionable and really precious, whenever the programming really started to fuck us up, to sit with our child self and just pour love into ourselves. But also like a loved one, an animal, and just that, like, sitting in that space and that focus and like cycling that into ourselves and seeing that loop, and like it repatterns a lot of stuff. So that's, I'll talk about that more next time, but yeah, thank you, Leila, for bringing that up. Griffin, takeaway. Thank you so much for sharing so much.
Well, yeah, first, thank you, Leila, for those kind words, and for everyone as well, for creating a space that makes it easy to share those things. But I also share them, I'm kind of incentivized to share them, because I feel like the more you share in this group, you actually have a collective group to help you problem solve some of the things that you're stuck on. So I feel very excited to share in this group, which is a pretty special thing to have. And on those lines, it's funny, Jasmine and Leila both said, I literally wrote down during Fawn's overview of ego that I feel like my gremlins are tied to my identity. So they're not just something that pops into my head every once in a while. It's they're who I am. And so if I get rid of them, then who am I? So it just reinforces the fear. And I wrote, all I need to do is replace it. And instead, what Jasmine said actually is something that just the being of I am is something I just like intellectually cannot wrap my head around yet. And the way that I seem to be operating is my brain needs to first understand it conceptually, and then I can feel it emotionally or, you know, incorporate it in some way. So what you have said has actually reframed things for me a little bit. And instead of trying to figure out how I can just kind of find and replace these things, I might also try and introduce this concept of just I am what I am and sit with that and see what kind of comes out of it. Because I don't know at this point, but I'm kind of excited to find out.
Thanks for sharing that. Okay. Yeah, that's a great one to sit with. And for those of us who tend to be, which is most of us, who tend to be super intellectual and just like, let's problem solve and figure things out and, like, you know, analyze. I mean, it's great. Thank goodness we can. It's super fun. Also, we have a lot of other different information systems that are a part of our, like, intelligence. So I love that you're open to that, Griffin. Awesome. Let's see. Joanne, take away.
So I wrote down self-compassion is the medicine to take us back to our whole self. And that resonated with me because I've really come to realize that daily affirmation process is very helpful for me in just bringing myself back to who I am and identifying, you know, what are those rewiring statements or what are those things that I am that make me whole, and reminding myself of that. So, so that really connected with me.
Beautiful. Yeah. Thank you for that. Everybody follow Joanne's lead with the affirmations and the, because it's true. That's a great way to reprogram our stuff is repetition and emotionalizing that repetition. So it kind of brings it from the head into the heart. And yeah. Awesome. I think I got everybody's takeaways. Yeah. Beautiful. Thank you, ladies. Thanks so much for opening, as always, opening up and sharing and being vulnerable. And one of the beautiful antidotes to shame is that shared humanity piece, that's sharing and talking about it. So like Griffin spoke to this, and I appreciate so much that all of you were able to come together and talk about this stuff. So your action items for the next couple of weeks, we will be talking about self-compassion on the next one, maybe even like part two and part three, because there's a lot in there. But your homework is to notice when you're feeling attached to, your identity feels attached to not being whole, and notice it, come back to the present moment, and just bring presence into that, bring some self-compassion, bring some kindness, whatever the medicine flavor is, forgiveness, kindness, acceptance, and practice this, though. I mean, this stuff, it works. It for sure works if we practice it. So that's my invitation to you. And notice also just when your ego is going off either end. So when it's gremlining on either side, or gremlining, or like kinging or queening, to just check in with like, how are you feeling as a result of that? How does that make you feel when this is happening? What's triggering it? What thoughts are like supporting it and giving it life? Just get really curious about what's going on in there. And feel free to always share in the Facebook group. We'll certainly be sharing on the next call. And I appreciate you all so much. Thanks for hanging over, doing your takeaways. Yay.
Big hug. Thanks, ladies. Thank you.
Thanks, all.
Bye.
Thank you. Good night, ladies.
Bye.
Ciao.